Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is performing again in Powell Hall. The concert marks the first public performance in the century-old Powell Hall building after a two-year, $140 million expansion and renovation. That first concert is ongoing at this hour, but yesterday I had the chance to talk with the orchestra's new composer-in-residence, Kevin Putz. We'll hear from him in a moment. And also yesterday, I had the chance to talk with STLPR Arts and Culture senior reporter, Jeremy Goodwin. I started by asking Jeremy why Powell Hall needed $140 million worth of work.
It's a good point, Elaine, because renovation or not, Powell Hall is a beautiful theater. It's a landmark. It's a place that people want to bring visitors and show them when they come to St. Louis. That's all true. But it's turning 100 years old pretty soon, and it's had some quirks, right? A lot of it was behind the scenes. The audience wasn't aware. There's no place to rehearse. If the orchestra was on stage and the In Unison Chorus or the St. Louis Symphony Chorus were performing in that concert, they would go warm up and rehearse down the street at the Third Baptist Church or across the street at the Grand Center Arts Academy. There was no place to warm up. I'm told musicians in the orchestra would find spaces in little corners wherever they could to get ready for the concert, in the basement, in the boiler room. There was no good place to change, especially for the women. Women hold about half the seats in the orchestra, and they were squeezed into a little room in the basement. And little things like that that make it a less attractive work environment when you're trying to attract internationally important musicians. But also the elevators were slow. Accessible seating was all clustered in one place. The seats all dated back to at least 1968. So there was room for some refurbishment.
So how does the performance hall look now?
It's to me, it was like it was suddenly in HD. Just very vivid. As I said, all the seats are new. They're all new seats. They, for the first time in known memory, painted the entire inside of the hall. They never had the chance to do that, but when they pulled out all the old seats, there was more space. They spent 2 months building scaffolding right there inside the hall to paint. And when they let some light in, they saw that little bits had been patched over the years, so all the paint didn't match. And from years of smoking in the room, there were nicotine stains on the ceiling. Now there's a beautiful white color around the inside of the theater, brilliant red seats, new LED lighting that just makes for a more brilliant and vivid visual effect.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything retained there that makes you remember what it was like to be in the older hall?
SLSO President and CEO Marie-Hélène Bernard says it's just fresher, and I think that's a good way to put it. It looks like the Powell Hall you remember, but it got a real good scrubbing.
Mm-hmm. So for the last 2 years, while this expansion and renovation was happening, the SLSO was living a nomadic lifestyle. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Right. They were performing mostly at the Stiefel Theater and the Two Hill Performing Arts Center. And the Stiefel in particular is a big room. It's a big place. And the sound there is dry. There's very little reverb or resonance. It sort of just goes ping out into the audience. And musicians couldn't hear themselves very well and had to play sort of more forcefully to fill the space. There wasn't room for as much nuance and a more complicated, richer sound that you can achieve in a smaller place like Powell Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the patrons, I'm sure, are the organization described it as, hey, we're out in the community interacting in different ways, finding maybe patrons who go to the Stiefel all the time now are discovering the symphony orchestra. But I think a lot of the subscribers and longtime supporters will be very happy to get back home.
You had the opportunity to hear the orchestra. Tell us what that sounded like.
I mean, it sounded great, but I think there's going to be a big placebo effect where a lot of people are going to say, hey, that sounds better than ever. I can't say I have a detailed enough memory of how it sounded before to compare it. I can say that I recorded some of a little preview performance that Stefan Denev and the orchestra gave, and it's the best sounding recording I've ever made in that room. I can say that much. But the SLSO put out a video on social media of music director Stefan Denev on stage clapping, one clap at a time. And he looked so delighted as he listened to just how the sound moved around, how it echoed, how it reverberated in the empty space. And it looked like someone in a toy store who was ready to play with some new toys.
And he was very excited when he talked with us on St. Louis on the Air about that. And Jeremy, you said that you got the best recording you'd ever made in Powell Hall. Where were you? Were you in the room? Where were you when
you did that? Was standing in the very back of the orchestra section, leaning against that back wall. So it sounded pretty vivid where I was standing. And Stefan Denev, in fact, spoke with the people who were there for this preview performance about the possibilities that you have in a really good sounding room. And I think we can listen to a little of that now.
If I whisper, you will hear it over there. It's truly magical. And let's play something very soft.
Right. And I did have to crank up the volume there, so it doesn't sound as echoey and boomy in the room as a little bit on that recording. He then, to sort of demonstrate that, the dynamics that are possible in Powell Hall, Denev led the orchestra through a bit of Stravinsky's The Firebird Suite.
That's the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra performing a bit of Stravinsky's Firebird in the newly renovated Powell Hall. Jeremy, I understand that there were some studies and tests done for the acoustics there.
Yeah, a big piece of the renovation was dealing with how it sounds in there. And Kierkegaard, a Chicago-based acoustic engineering firm, did these extensive tests where they beamed sound out from the stage into the house at every frequency at a balanced level, microphones around the house. They recorded how long it took to hit a certain place when it came back to the stage, when it reflected back. They sent possible chairs when they were shopping around for what chairs are going to go in here. They would take samples of them and they sent them to a lab to have it examined how sound bounced off of those chairs. And they talked to the musicians about their experiences. And it turned out that the rear wall where I stood against was flat and it bounced the sound back in a way that it was almost a little echoey for the musicians. So the musicians felt like they couldn't hear very well. And they also the acoustic engineers pinpointed where the best spots to hear the music are. And it is not the seats right in front in the center. It's actually the rear and in the balcony because the shape of the stage and the walls was sending the sound out to the sort of the rear corners rather than straight ahead. So once they had all this information, they then made adjustments to the room to adjust the acoustics. Mm-hmm. There's the back wall is now 8 feet closer and it's contoured differently. There's wings on stage left and stage right that affect the sound. And the challenge they had was to preserve the great sound in the balcony and improve it elsewhere without changing the character of the really good sound. Mm-hmm. And I got a good impression, and it sounded great to me. But one thing that the sound engineer Brian Corey said to me was that we won't know for sure until the orchestra plays in a full room with all the people there.
Right.
So the final test of the sound is still to come, but people feel very good about it so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds really beautiful, the way that they have renovated the hall. They clearly have put so much work into it. I mean, 2 years worth.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to all of the planning, you had an opportunity to tour the building. What was your sense of how people were feeling as they moved through that space?
There was a ribbon cutting for a few hundred people, and it was a great vibe in there. People were very happy to be there. My biggest takeaway is that with the expansion, which is a sort of extension to the building that wraps around three quarters of it, and an additional 54,000 square feet, my takeaway from that is that it feels very new, and it feels like a sleek, beautiful building that you're entering. But as you go into the foyer and into the concert hall, it very much feels like Powell Hall. You feel like you're in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, now there's bigger elevators that are faster. Now there's bars and concession areas on every level. Now there's bathrooms on every level. Now the box office is a spacious place you can stroll through rather than sort of trudging single file through a crowded box office lobby, which used to be the routine. So there's a lot of conveniences that audiences will notice, but a lot of the improvements are also backstage, the new 12 warm-up rooms, new rooms for guest artists, crucially a 3,700 square foot performance and rehearsal studio for educational programming and special events where they can have the full In Unison chorus there or symphony chorus there, singing at the top of their lungs while the orchestra is playing down the hall in Powell Hall, and it's complete. The sound is isolated, and everyone can do their business. And it's just there's more elbow room, and it's a more comfortable experience for musicians and for patrons.
Mm-hmm. And for patrons, both seasoned and new ones too. Jeremy Goodwin is STLPR's Arts and Culture Senior Reporter. Jeremy, thanks so much.
It's my great pleasure, Elaine.
I talked with Jeremy yesterday, and we'll hear from him again a bit later in the show. We need to take a quick break, and we'll return with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's new composer in residence, Kevin Putz. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Our next guest is excited about the reopening of Powell Hall after a two-year, $140 million expansion and renovation. Kevin Putz is a St. Louis native and a Pulitzer Prize and Grammy Award-winning composer. He's the orchestra's new composer in residence, and this opening weekend's concert features the world premiere of House of Tomorrow, a song cycle for mezzo-soprano, chorus, and orchestra commissioned by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra and set to the text of Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. I talked with Kevin Putz yesterday and first asked him about what's going through his mind as Powell Hall opens to the public.
It's extraordinary, and to have spent a little time there in the last couple of days, it's just an absolutely amazing expansion and very seamless too. I know the old hall a little bit from the performances of my work here in the last 10 years maybe, but really what they've done is so beautiful, and it works so well with the space that already exists and is so beautiful, and they've preserved that and added to it, so it's really very exciting.
Mm-hmm. You were born in St. Louis and lived here, I think, till you were about 9 or so. You grew up in Michigan. Do you recall your introduction to the SLSO? Did you visit when you were a child?
No, I really didn't. And it's kind of strange because I was such a, from a very young age, I was listening to classical music. My grandparents, my dad's parents, lived in the area. They lived near the airport because my my grandfather worked on airplanes, and but they played. They had a record player, and they played Beethoven and Mozart and things. And I remember them talking about the St. Louis Symphony and Leonard Slatkin. But I don't think I ever visited Powell Hall. I might have done it once when I was very, very little. But but I heard about it. So it's a sort of legendary thing when I was growing up, and now to be there in this professional way as a composer is kind of surreal and really exciting.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned about 10 years ago you came to SLSO, and you are no stranger to working with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. But House of Tomorrow is your latest work. What can audiences expect or maybe anticipate with this?
Well, I wanted, you know, it was, first of all, just such an honor to be, asked to do this commission, this really important commission to commemorate the reopening of the hall. And I wanted to do something that was positive and forward-looking. And I looked for a lot of different texts to use because the orchestra wanted me to write something for mezzo-soprano and orchestra. They were thinking of getting Joyce DiDonato, who I've worked with a couple of times through operas and other projects, to sing. And so I had to find something with words. And I happened upon this text, and I think I just found the words, House of Tomorrow. And I thought, oh, that sounds like this is a concert house of tomorrow.
Right.
And I found that it was from a book that was popular maybe 40 years ago. I think there was a lot of popularity, Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. And I found this line, for you shall not be trapped nor tamed, for your souls dwell in the house of tomorrow. It's a very kind of beautiful thing about not feeling, imprisoned by anything, by any ideas or anything. And this, the world of possibilities is open to you. So it was a very positive and beautiful text. And I found there are other texts in that book that would lend themselves well to this this piece, which actually incorporates the St. Louis Symphony Chorus as well. The book is set up in such a way that there's a prophet who shows up in this town, and the townspeople start to ask the prophet questions, like speak to us about various things, about joy and sorrow and teaching and children, and then speak to us of houses. And that's where the title came from. But we have the chorus and mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato, who sort of plays the prophet in this piece, and the orchestra all kind of intertwined in a certain sense. And it's really very exciting for me to work with such massive forces on the stage, to see this huge chorus and orchestra, and of course Joyce, this wonderful superstar mezzo-soprano, singing my music.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there have been rehearsals. What was it like to hear your work performed finally in that space?
Kind of extraordinary, because we heard it kind of in pieces. First I heard the chorus by itself, and then I heard the orchestra with Joyce singing her lines. And then last night we heard all of it together, the chorus, the orchestra, and the acoustic in Powell Hall is really unlike any hall I've been in. It's astounding. And especially, actually, if you're in the back, in the balcony, the sound just envelops you. It's almost a kind of sonic effect or something. It's just extraordinary. So really, and especially I would say for this music in particular, the hall is just the perfect acoustic for it. So it was really, really exciting last night to finally hear it all come together.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato, and she is the soloist. And you've mentioned you worked with her before. What does she bring uniquely to this work?
Well, I wrote an opera called The Hours, which was premiered by the Metropolitan Opera, and Joyce played Virginia Woolf in that opera. And more recently, we have worked on a kind of massive 65-minute-long song cycle using the text of Emily Dickinson. So I know her voice very well, and I know the way she communicates goes way beyond simple interpretation of the music. She really kind of inhabits the humanitarian concerns about the piece, the just the whole world of the piece and what it might mean to people and what it might mean to people today, you know, living through what we're living through at the moment. So there's just so much more that enters into the picture when you work with her. I mean, she's an incredible artist. She's uses her voice in the most astonishing ways. There's so much variety of color in her sound. But really, it's the way she understands the music and the way she brings it to the audience that is just really very, very, very special. And it's a great honor to work with her.
Mm-hmm. Is there something about the way she performs that elicits almost a response from audience in the same way that we see with the prophet and someone who's having dialogue?
Very interesting. That's interesting. I mean, she connects with her audiences in such an immediate way. And I think there are probably times in this piece when she's singing more directly to the audience, and there are other times when she's listening to what the chorus is singing, because the chorus is singing her lines after she sings them. They're sort of learning from her. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's, as this incredible performer she is, she's able to kind of balance all of that. She's able to bring the audience in to what's going on, but also feel as if she's communicating within the piece with the chorus.
Mm-hmm. You seem to have a penchant for poetry.
You know, it's interesting. When I started composing professionally, I guess, in my mid-20s, I thought, I just love the orchestra. I just want to do nothing but write for the orchestra. But I had an amazing opportunity in, I don't know when this was, it must have been 2007 or 8, I was asked to write an opera. And I didn't know how to do that. I had written very little for voice. But the more I got into it, not only did I love to write for the voice, but I found how much I really love text and poetry and how that kind of elicits an emotional response from me. As a composer, I love to work with it. I've done a lot of it. In fact, I would say 75% of my projects over the last 10 years have dealt with poetry or text in some way, letter writing or opera librettos. But I really love the way there's music in those words already, and then you have to find a way to support it with harmony and with orchestration and with voices and instruments.
Mm-hmm. This week and last, these are busy weeks for you, Kevin. you just released last week a new album, and it features several world premiere recordings of your works, and those were performed by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. One of the ones I enjoyed was a track called Virlai. Let's listen to some of it. That's Virlai, composed by Kevin Putz and performed by the SLSO. The orchestra will also play that piece later this season. That is a very lively piece. What was the inspiration for it?
Well, when Stéphane Deneuve became music director, I guess he had known my music to some extent, though we had never worked together. And he asked me to write something for his first concert as music director. And the theme of the concert was French-American connections. And I had known this song by the medieval composer Guillaume de Machaut. I have always loved it. And in fact, I tried several years ago to write an orchestra piece based on it. But I didn't really like the results, and I came back to it. It's a tune that I heard when I was in school in a musicology class, like a music history class. It's such a catchy tune that was written, in the 1300s, before we had any kind of harmony or any kind of instruments the way we have now, before any of the music that we really understand now existed. And so to take this melody and bring my own kind of harmonic language, my own musical language to it, and orchestral language too, and to have it build from a very, very, this kind of very, very small, a few percussion instruments and a piccolo playing, and gradually more woodwinds are added, and eventually the strings play the melody, but it keeps repeating and kind of cycling. And I thought that would be really interesting to try to do that. I don't know if some of your listeners might know the piece Bolero by Ravel that does that. You know, the same melody keeps repeating, but the more of the orchestra plays until the entire orchestra is playing, which is very exciting. And I sort of thought of a similar approach to this this sort of ancient tune.
Is it fair to describe that as a fanfare?
I think so. I think of it as a concert opener. You know, it ends really big with the brass playing and the orchestra playing. And so I think that's very much the way it turned out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevin, you are the SLSO's composer in residence this season. What does that mean?
Well, it doesn't actually mean that I live here, but I'm taking a few trips here. I'm here now to hear the premiere of House of Tomorrow. And I will be back in the spring for a repeat performance of Concerto for Orchestra, which is a piece that the orchestra commissioned as well. There are a couple of other performances of my work. There's a concerto I wrote for the string trio Time for Three, a wonderful trio, that's an incredibly exciting group of three musicians who also sing. They play string instruments and sing, and I wrote them a concerto called Contact, which we won 2 Grammys for, so we're very happy about that. But they're playing that concerto in the spring. I think there's a performance of Virelai that you were mentioning as well. So it just means the orchestra is sort of doing a lot of my music, and the SLSO audiences will get to know it pretty well by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Is there something about the SLSO that stands out to you? I mean, you have a lot of experience with many different orchestras.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think, number one, they're one of the great orchestras in the world, quite honestly. And all respects, you know, every section of the orchestra is just the top-notch players, brass, the woodwinds, the strings, the percussion. And so you bring all that together, and it's just very exciting because I feel like I can sort of write anything I want for them, and they can play it. And I think we've developed a kind of relationship of trust where they are open to a new work that they've never played before. And I sort of feel that not only when I'm working with them in person, but when I'm composing the piece too. I feel like they will be receptive of the music, which is a really fantastic kind of artistic relationship to have.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are some people, when they think of composers, of the music that you are making, they don't think of someone who is young and living.
Well, I'm living.
Yes, you are definitely living. For someone who is hearing this interview, maybe it's someone who is young or someone who has not been exposed to symphonic music. What is it that you would tell this person about how your work maybe is a little bit different?
Well, I suppose it's different in the sense that I think modern composers feel very afraid, actually, to speak directly in a language that we all understand and is not foreign to people. I think a lot of modern composers who are very skilled and very talented feel that they need to speak in such a way through their music that is misunderstood, will sort of incomprehensible in a certain sense, that it's too difficult to really get your mind around. But I just never been able to do that. I love the music that I've always loved. You know, as a kid, I loved pop music, I loved film music, I loved classical music. I love it all, and that all sort of is brought into my music. For better or worse, you know, maybe some, you know, kind of experts don't take it as seriously as they might, but I really feel very much that I'm trying to communicate directly in the way that, you know, any pop musician or you know, film composer or even a, you know, classical composer would do. So I just don't think there's anything about it that is meant to be misunderstood. I hope that people will sort of feel brought into the music from the beginning and carried through it as the piece progresses.
So returning to this season's opening concert, aside from hearing the world premiere of your own piece in front of what will surely be a packed house, what else on the program are you looking forward to hearing?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to another premiere by James Lee III, a wonderful new short piece, but very, very exciting orchestra piece. I'm looking forward to hearing Strauss' Ein Heldenleben, because I know that the orchestra and Stefan Deneuve bring something very special to that piece. It's an incredibly exciting orchestra piece, romantic, well, sort of 20th century romantic piece. So I'm looking forward to all of it.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Putz, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Kevin Putz is the SLSO's composer in residence. The world premiere of his new work, House of Tomorrow, is being performed to open the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's 2025-2026 season at the newly expanded and renovated Powell Hall. I talked with him yesterday. And here again is STLPR Arts and Culture senior reporter Jeremy Goodwin. Jeremy, you were listening in on that interview. What was your takeaway?
Well, one thing is it was nice to hear that a young man growing up in a music-loving family in Michigan had heard of Powell Hall and thought of it as a cool place. But I love the fact that we're here at the beginning of this orchestra's 146th season, and the headline is, let's talk about the new work. Let's talk about the new music that's coming out. I really enjoy that piece of the SLSO's programming. This year, the SLSO is performing three commissions and two more pieces that were co-commissions with other organizations. In fact, the stat is that 40% of the pieces this season in the subscription concerts are by living composers. And that's not including when they go play the Harry Potter soundtrack and whatnot. You know, there's more living composers there. So there's also three Live at the Pulitzer concerts, which are chamber performances in the Pulitzer Gallery. And that is all, those shows are dedicated to pieces by living composers. So I really appreciate that aspect of things. But if you want to hear the classics, you have plenty of opportunity to see Mahler's Fifth Symphony, Mozart's The Magic Flute, works by Strauss and Britten and Ravel. There's all that stuff too. But it is not just a sort of stale, brittle, greatest hits kind of programming. It is a interesting season that juxtaposes new and old works, asks questions about musical legacies, and I'm excited to hear some of it.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of that prioritization of, you know, works by living composers introducing the fresh, especially given this renovation and the expansion of Powell Hall?
Well, I think any classical musician is going to say that they are trying to provide a fresh interpretation of the work. It's not just about sort of recreating other versions of a famous piece of music. And they get, when I speak to musicians, that they're really interested about digging into the new stuff, because they can play a lot of these folks can probably play Mahler's Fifth Symphony from memory, which is a wonderful, impressive, beautiful thing, but working with new material that you're one of the first people to interpret it. This is one of the first audiences to hear it, as a certain energy that really complements the energy of when you're saying, hey, there's this big Beethoven piece coming in after intermission and we can't wait for that. I think to be vital and to be relevant, an organization like the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra needs to have both pieces.
Mm-hmm. Earlier this month, Jeremy, the orchestra announced a contract extension with the musicians. And when I spoke with you before that conversation with Kevin Putz, you had talked about how much was done to ensure that the musicians were able to use the space in ways that made sense for them. What are some of the details with that contract extension? And what does that convey, that extension, about SLSO's stability and how it's building into the future?
Well, the sort of the red letter aspect of this is that the musicians union and the organization came to a new contract a year before the present contract is even expiring. So they were so close, apparently, in their positions that they were able to get this wrapped up before the season even started. That's impressive to me. It's encouraging to see that relationship appears to be a healthy one, because that, of course, wasn't always the case. The low point probably came back in 2005 when a contract dispute between the musicians and the organization led to the orchestra being dark for 2 months. So those days feel very far away right now. Mm-hmm. In terms of the new agreement, there's a salary increase. There's what is described as a structural change to evening rehearsals. But if you read between the lines, it sounds like they're wanting to have musicians spend more time out in the community doing outreach programs, working with the orchestra's two in-house choruses, sort of being out there and not always on stage on Powell Hall. They've also created a task force to look at how they hire new musicians, and that's always a discussion in classical music circles. I'll be interested to hear more about that as that develops.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Goodwin is STLPR's Arts and Culture Senior Reporter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Elaine.
I talked with Jeremy yesterday, and before we move to our next topic, let's hear a bit more of what Jeremy recorded from inside the renovated Powell Hall earlier this month. This is W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues. You can hear the SLSO season opening concert this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. at Powell Hall. And you can hear Saturday evening's concert live on St. Louis Public Radio.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.